Okay, the family members have something. They do different things, or maybe that's the third phase, but they start to notice the family has a function, a composite structure, a thing, in fact. Finally, when the relation of the parts is exquisite, when the parts are adjusted to the special point, we recognize it is that thing which it is. And then that might be the love that one feels in the family. Its soul, its whatness, leaps to us from the vestment of its appearance, the family's appearance. The soul of the commonest object, the structure of which is so adjusted, that's the structuring of the family, constantly adjusted, seems to us radiant. The object achieves its epiphany. The family achieves its epiphany. Okay, so then you go to, hope you can handle this. Obviously, the business of the artist in this context is that of an impersonal agent. See, detached, humble before the laws of things. 1950, the laws of things, the laws of media, as well as before his own artistic activity as revealer. So in the beginning, the business of the artist in this context is that of an impersonal agent, starting to notice things, the laws of things, humble before the laws of things, as well as before his own artistic activity as revealer. He must strip himself of all but his mere agency. He must strip himself of all but his mere agency. Now note, there's all this he talk. I don't think women are included in McLuhan's vision at this point. In the 40s and 50s, it's more of a patriarchal positioning. Obviously, the business of the artist in this context is that of an impersonal agent, humble before the laws of things, as well as before his own artistic activity as revealer. I guess maybe humble before, in the context of that of an impersonal agent, humble as well as before his own, yeah, it must be humble before his own artistic activity as revealer. He must strip himself of all but his mere agency. So then it quotes Stephen the artist. I have only pushed to its logical conclusion the definition Aquinas has given of the beautiful. Aquinas, he says. I guess someone else says Aquinas. And he says, Poklos on kai visa placent. So Latin. And then he says, he seems to regard the beautiful, Aquinas seems to regard the beautiful as that which satisfies the aesthetic appetite and nothing more, that the mere apprehension of which pleases, just to apprehend the symmetry or something of the aesthetic. So then McLuhan says, the passage in St. Thomas, formerly distinguishing beauty and goodness, has wide but precise bearings for everything Joyce did as an artist. The passage in St. Thomas, formerly distinguishing beauty and goodness, has wide but precise bearings for everything Joyce did as an artist. So then it goes into that. Character says, but they differ logically, for goodness properly relates to appetite, goodness being what all things desire. All things desire goodness, and that's the basic appetite. And therefore it has the aspect of an end, the appetite being a kind of movement towards a thing. On the other hand, beauty relates to a cognitive power, for those things are said to be beautiful which pleases when seen. On the other hand, beauty relates to a cognitive power, for those things are said to be beautiful which pleases when seen. Hence, beauty consists in due proportion, for the senses delight in things duly proportioned, as in what is like them. See, there's the matching. The senses like what is like them. They are duly proportioned. Because the sense, too, is a sort of reason, as is every cognitive power. Every sense is an act of reason, or has a rational part of itself. Now, since knowledge is by assimilation, and likeness relates to form, beauty properly belongs to the nature of a formal cause. So there's the famous formal cause that McLuhan exaggerates and says, you know, Eric McLuhan's recent book is on formal cause. And so the formal cause is the audience, the outer world, the people you're interacting with. So now, since knowledge is by assimilation and likeness relates to form, beauty properly belongs to the nature of a formal cause. So McLuhan's going to spend many years explaining that, the nature of a formal cause. So then, that the senses themselves are properly analogous. In other words, they're metaphors too, as are the other cognitive powers. that the senses themselves are properly analogous as the other cognitive powers, as are the other cognitive powers, was not a fact lost on Joyce, who knew that the creative process itself was a retracing of the stages of apprehension, which means digesting your experience. We're going to lead to eating is the creative process. This is probably where I got that statement. After reading this, I made that statement. Taking the drops is a public act of environmental manipulation. See, when you're eating your food, you don't think that your food is affecting everybody else's digestive system. Okay, we're not hearing from anybody. Who's been muted? Nobody muted?
No.
Hey, Roxy, you only got 25 minutes left, right? Maybe she's already gone. Maybe she's getting ready to go. She's going to miss all the letters that we're going to do. You're going to have to check that out later when you get the time. Let's see. Is anybody muted? I had to renew it. Yeah, she's muted. So you got 25 minutes?
Yes, but I'm here now. I was getting dressed as I was listening, but I was muted.
Right, and I don't know you're muted because the fucking thing goes dead and I can't see.
This is also this whole archetype of the grail and the mass, the holy grail, that they think they have to have a sacred object to drink this thing that is going to help them ascend.
Yeah, right, the holy grail, which is a perversion of the RNA drops experience. You're taking the container as the sacred thing and forgetting what you're drinking.
Yes, and, it happened with different archetypes that people thought they were really in the quest for the objects. And really,
now,
Hitler and Napoleon and everybody.
Right, but look, the point here is that the act of sensory existence, the act of breathing and noticing and being, is the original archetype. The original metaphor. So, yes, we aren't limited to our senses. So the first metaphor
is
the senses.
Eating. The fall is because of the apple.
That's
and then
right.
The ascension
eating.
Is with the drops. So it's like...
Yeah, you go back. I came up with a solution. Okay, eating, fuck this. We got to come up with something that we can eat that'll get us out of this mess. And so we did it with the drops. So eating... is, first of all, you focus, you go through those three stages of beauty, and then you see the apple, and now it's there, it's whatness, and then you fucking absorb it. You eat it. You consume it. So the very act of existing in the physical is an archetype of all other kinds of creativity. So that's what we're saying here.
People that disconnect from non-physical then start having addictions and
overusing.
They cannot control.
They get stuck in their media. They get stuck in their senses, which are their media.
And this eating or inputs are that's the way they used to get out.
Right.
Instead of
ascend
by taking the drops, they use the same input to destroy themselves.
Right, but look at what Ion did. It had to come back and remind people of the sensory entrapments that have been happening and say things like, you don't need to be human. Being human is not cool. You don't need to eat. You people are eating dead food, so it shows that you don't need real food to survive because you're all relatively living and you're eating nothing. So you don't have to eat anything. You know, it's Ion came in at the deepest ground and questioned the very media of sensory apprehension.
Yes, and then if you take the drops, your breathing and your words or whatever you do affects the environment.
Yeah.
And didn't Ion say also that it takes a lot more power or more creativity to stay human than to be ascended?
No, yes. Aging is very hard to do, if that's what you mean. A lot of work goes into aging. It's easier to ascend. Is that what you just said?
Yes.
Yeah. Now that's a contradiction to the taken wisdom, the cliche thing, where everybody has to work their butt off to get ascended.
Did you have to walk the whole path of Santiago de Compostela?
Yeah, walk 1,000 miles for Bob or Carolyn.
To get a shell. Here you have your shell. Thank you for
participating. Yeah, you get a shell? Is that what you get at the end?
Yeah, they got this symbol of...
Oh, wow.
But they were real, like Frank the First, that he also was wearing his shell for real.
Right. I noticed that, the close-up of the little shells on his chain around his neck. I saw that somewhere. Oh, it's in your video, or was it somewhere else? I don't know.
Yeah, it's in the video.
Right.
Yes,
so I'm sitting here.
Showing that he was in the knowing that he's an alchemist, that he is, he has this, all this message from Hermes. And,
right.
And he put it, everything really in plain sight. So.
Yeah, but... But in plain sight is you got to get through the illusion of that. That's a plain sight is an analog. For example,
yes,
I'm sitting here.
Even if some people saw the hidden ground of his painting, oh, there is this king in the brocade. They will not know what that is about. Why is
right.
the hidden ground red, and what is this king about? And until you have your props, the bottle,
right.
And the logo.
So people talk and use the word God all the time, and I say they have no clue what it means. It's the same thing. I sit here and look over my view, and I see people driving in cars going somewheres. They're deluded. They're on a spiritual quest to go somewheres, and they're hanging onto their cars like the word God. So the action of people driving is something we can mock. So I walk out to be in any, I go out and be in any environment. I walk. And I walk not on the highways. I don't walk on the beaten paths. I take different places. And my action of walking is a rebuttal to everything going on around me. It's a big fuck you. I will not get in a car. I will not get stuck in one extension. I can walk along, swing my arms, breathe, and have a sense of total tactile sensorium, multi-sensuous involvement.
Yes, and it's amazing that these archetypes are there, and even when Macron became president, he did his little wall from darkness to the light in the Louvre in front of the pyramid. Like he was really trying to do with the bulb, but...
Yeah, I like the fact that all the cars are called Trumps. Right? Each card in the tarot is a trump.
And there are 22 trumps.
Yeah, there's 22. Oh, you know what? In some of these articles, they do say, I never saw it this clear, but they do say in some of these articles and newspaper things I never saw before that I got, that McClellan was under the knife in surgery for 22 hours. I think Time magazine 50 years ago reported like 20 and a half hours, and I was wondering if I was smudging a bit to make it 22, but no, some say 22 and a half, but there are places where they say 22 hours. So there's your 22, two run two. Okay, so we're looking here, and the senses are properly analogous. Was not a fact lost on Joyce. He knew that the creative process itself was a retracing of the stages of eating, the stages of apprehension, the stages of digestion. And this digestion thing will become important later in this article. In this passage from St. Thomas can also be seen the reason for Joyce's preferring comic to tragic art. Any movement of appetite within the labyrinth of cognition is a minotaur, you know, the thing in the labyrinth, which must be slain by the hero artist. Anything which interferes with cognition, whether concupiscence, pride, imprecision, or vagueness, is a minotaur ready to devour beauty. So that Joyce not only was the first to reveal the link between the stages. Yeah?
It would be interesting to think of our intestine as the labyrinth, and the minotaur is somehow there, and when you take the drops, it's eliminated and it starts.
Right.
This labyrinth.
The minotaur. Yeah, you lose your desire to devour beauty. You become beauty.
Yes, or to
beauty.
Disconnect from non-physical and get addicted or eat junk food
right.
and all these things.
Right. So that's partly what is Joyce is kind of like a yogi here. So that Joyce not only was the first to reveal the link between the stages of apprehension and the creative process, not only that, he was the first to understand how the drama of cognition or the creative process or the stages of apprehension itself was the key archetype of all human ritual, myth, and legend. That's what I was just saying, right? The sensory action of being, breathing, and eating is the archetype of all big ideas, human ritual, myth, and legend.
And you are doing this metanoia of all archetypes, and then you say the solution is to rebob. Here are the drops.
Yeah. Hey, we're not just thinking it out. We actually have a little. This is all just a preamble. You can't have what you want until you hear us out. You must listen to us for 1,000 hours before we'll give you the fucking solution.
For 2,000 years around the world.
Yeah, for 2,000 years we held it back. Let's see. Oh, I got to look this up. The Gaia TV channel. I saw David Wilcox interviewing Rupert Sheldrake, who did a talk on TED, and it was banned because he kind of put down science or something. And so in the interview, it's such a lame interview. These guys know nothing, these New Age idiots. They had no way to make it interesting. Just a bunch of stupid, basically just saying, yeah, we're scientists,
so
stupid.
It's really just mortar, just words and the resonance and the spirit and blah, blah, blah. What?
Yeah, right. What? Now, Gaia, there's a New Age TV network. I want to just see who is speaking. They would never invite us on. Let's see, Gaia Network. David Wilcock and Gaia. Okay, there's Gaia. Gaia, Yoga, Transformation, Seeking Truth, Films, and Docs. So it seems to be a website. Cosmic Display, these are some of the videos. Introducing Morphic Field Theory, Rupert Sheldrake. Awakening Our Collective Consciousness, Barry Andrews. Co-Creating Earth's Conscious Ascension. Cosmic Disclosure by Corey Good and David Wilcock. Now, we know Ian covers these things with the greatest irreverence and new ideas and counterintuitive stuff. What do they say, that phrase? Yeah, counterintuitive. These are all the cliches that Ian came in to disrupt. So they have all these shows here on this network, Gaia. All right. Okay, so anyways, it was pretty hokey. Stuff we can't listen to. It's too slow. Life in the slow lane. Okay, so here's Joyce. He's figuring everything out. Everything is just a simple act of eating. All great discoveries will just be the drama of cognition in your mouth. And it's the archetype. There's your archetype of all human ritual, myth, and legend. And you gradually, Roxy, have been dumping all kinds of different rituals, myths, and legends into the videos around the archetype of Iondom. And thus, Joyce was able to incorporate. Look at this. And thus, he was able to incorporate at every point in his work the body of the past, the whole past, in immediate relation to the slightest current of perception. So all the historical framed visual space data related to the smell, the color for the eye, the sound of the room, the slightest current of perception. Joyce could well afford to look patronizingly on the psychological gropings of Freud and Jung and on the inferior poetic consciousness of W.B. Yeats or Proust. And Joyce said in the Holy Office, quote, "So distantly I turned to view the shamblings of that motley crew, those souls that hate the strength of mine." No, those souls that hate the strength of, those souls that hate the strength that mine has, steeled in the school of old Aquinas. So he's saying everybody else is a Gnostic fuck-up, and they don't know what I know, and therefore I am strong. So then McLuhan says, "There was no shambling and no guesswork in anything Joyce did as an artist, an absolute clairvoyance and precision." See, what's good about this is that as a poet, McLuhan can include ESP and the non-scientific aspects of cognition. The scientists can't do that. An absolute clairvoyance and precision attended Joyce's work from the first page of the portrait, that's about 1916 or so, to the end of Finning His Wake, 1939. And the reason for this, as he insisted, was his grasp of the full creative implications of the Thomistic analysis of cognition. So then he quotes from Stephen Hero. But during the formulation of his artistic creed, had he not found item after item upheld for him in advance by the greatest and most orthodox doctor of the church? So every creative insight he got, he realized that Aquinas had done it. While the entire theory, in accordance with which his entire artistic life was shaped, arose most conveniently for its purpose out of the mass of Catholic theology. Now, that could be the mass that McLuhan attended every day, or the mass of details, not sure. But during the formulation of his artistic creed, had he not found item after item upheld for him in advance by the greatest and most orthodox doctor of the church, that's Aquinas, while the entire theory in accordance with which his entire artistic life was shaped arose most conveniently for his purpose out of the mass of Catholic theology. So it meant that he had a lot of Catholic details as a budding priest. He was going to be a priest at one point, or his mother wanted him to. All those concepts were there for him to mutate into a new pattern. It is the Thomistic view that beauty relates to a cognitive rather than a volitional power, that means appetite, volitional, willful, that led Joyce to prefer comedy to tragedy. So there's an aesthetic appreciation, an intellectual appreciation, calling it the cognitive. The long passage from his notebooks given by Herbert Gorman, who wrote a book called James Joyce, pages 96 to 97 in that book, the passage that Gorman writes will become a locus classicus. So here is what the quote is. An improper art aims at exciting, in the way of comedy, the feeling of desire. So bad art awakens desire. But the feeling which is proper to comic art is the feeling of joy, the feeling which the possession of some good excites in us. For desire urges us from rest, get in the car and take off, that we may possess something. For desire urges us from rest that we may possess something. But joy holds us in rest as long as we possess something. All art which excites in us the feeling of joy is so far comic, and according as this feeling of joy is excited, what's this sentence? And according as this feeling of joy is excited by whatever is substantial or accidental in human fortunes, the art is to be judged more or less excellent. So, desire urges us from rest, lose your rest, that we lose your slack, that we may possess something. For desire urges us from rest, that we may possess something. But joy holds us in rest, no need to go anywhere, as long as we possess something. So you're trying to possess something with desire, you already possess something with joy. All art which excites in us the feeling of joy is so far comic, and according as this feeling of joy is excited by whatever is substantial or accidental in human fortunes, the art is to be judged more or less excellent, if it is expressing the feeling of joy. From this it may be seen that tragedy is the imperfect manner, and comedy the perfect manner in art. All art, again, is static, for the feelings of terror and pity on one hand and of joy on the other hand are feelings which arrest us. So all art, again, is static.
And, I think in all this Hermetic tradition, art is really used to put a message that goes beyond the audience of its time, like portraits of Frank. One think, oh, the portrait of a king. But then there is something else in the hidden ground, in the background.
Right.
That he's pointing out that what he was doing in his castles and with Leonardo is something else. It's not about his king, his persona.
Right.
He was doing something more transcendental. And in many other works, like the work of Botticelli or the work of Leonardo, they are really trying to go beyond, like in the Mona Lisa, there is so much information about many things about astrology, about perception, how you can see things if you turn the about archetypes, about the ascension, that that's the art. It's like some type of archive of this.
Well, the perennial,
the real work of men. What are they doing for real? Is trying to ascend or to go back to home, like Ion says.
Yeah.
So that's the what they are trying to transmit in these works.
Well, it's the only
thing to express. Joyce in the Finnegan's Wake. Yeah, that is the real transcendence.
The real communication. The only thing, once you know the basic root of real communication or valuable communication, or that you know what the same message is all through all culture, that's significant. When you know that,
and it's pointing. It's really crazy that millions and millions of people go see the Mona Lisa every year. It's like, why?
Yeah.
There is something really, some power in the archetypes, in the idea.
Right. So,
like,
all art again.
Maybe people don't get it consciously, but something, maybe their non-physical part does get something.
Yeah, and then that allows them to live a little longer.
Yeah,
until
well,
the appointed day.
I have to go.
I know, but I want to read you this last sentence before you go. So we'll stop this and we'll continue next week. But it says, all art again is static. It's like timeless. For the feelings of terror and pity on one hand and of joy on the other hand are feelings which arrest us. So art tries to get you back to the rest position. It will be seen afterwards how this rest is necessary for the apprehension of the beautiful. For beauty is a quality of something seen, but terror and pity and joy are states of mind. So all art again is static for the feelings of terror and pity on one hand and joy on the other hand. All art again is static for the feelings of terror and pity on one hand and of joy on the other hand. All art again is static, and they're all feelings which arrest us. It will be seen afterwards how this rest is necessary for the apprehension of the beautiful. So you got to stop the person so you can see the beautiful. For beauty is a quality of something seen, but terror and pity and joy are states of mind. Now all this is going to get upset by the weird tactile movement in society, in the global theater and beyond, and the android meme. These statements, these values become maybe very hard to connect to the new yoga that's required. Yeah, I'll leave you with that, young lady.
Yes, thank you, Ofenel. Thank you. Thank you.
For thank you, the other attenders.
Yes.
Thanks for the video.
Thank you.
And we're working
thanks
on
thanks for the video.
Well, thanks for your
stuff.
Words.
Thanks for the whole
thank
complex.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Aya. Thank you, Botticelli. Thank you, Plato. Thank you, everybody who's been doing this for so long.
Yes.
And somehow I have the impression they're aware that this thing is happening.
Being done, yes.
Yes.
Well, McLuhan's glad that someone's reading this article. It hasn't been read into the record ever. And we're doing a good breaking apart, discussing it. So we will require your contributions next week, so we'll continue then, and I'll go on to some other stuff, which I recommend you get the time and listen to the other stuff.
Yes,
I do.
Yeah, sometimes when I'm biking, I turn on my cell phone and I listen.
Good.
I continue.
Did you hear much of last week that you missed?
No, but some.
Yeah, you want to hear the committee meeting. It's really good, really funny. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
Everybody say goodbye.